it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wisden World Cup Daily Podcast. South Africa are genuine contenders for the 2023 World Cup. They absolutely hammered Australia today and look now to leave Pat Cummins' men properly up against it just a week into the competition. On a relayed pitch, Australia won the toss and that was basically as good as it got for them. Quinton de Kock scored his 200 in as many games as the Pro Tiers hit 311 on a pitch that never really looked like a belter before the South Africa attack ripped through the Australia top order. There are a couple of controversial umpire calls in there as well as one of the all-time great commentary stints that we'll talk about later. I'm Yaz Rana and with me today is Ben Gardner. Ben, South Africa are 2 from 2. It's hard to call them underdogs anymore. As such, is this where the tournament will begin to unravel for them?
Well, yeah, I mean, I did sort of shudder a bit when you said genuine World Cup contenders. Think about what the South Africans listening to this podcast would be yelling, sort of like, please don't call us that. Don't give us that hope. Because, you know, we've been here before with South Africa where they look good at a World Cup and then, you know.
It's theirs to lose, really, isn't it? Well,
not quite, but there is a lot to like about that side increasingly. I mean, we've been talking about this a lot and even more in the build-up, actually. When you're looking at different sides and every side has good players because it's a World Cup. So when you're trying to pick holes in a side, you actually tend not to look at what's the best that a side can be, but where could it go wrong for them? Mm. And you can see where that is for South Africa, really, because it's not a side that you could say has all bases covered. It's like, I don't know if you call it old school, but it's very sort of simple and straight down the line. They have 6 batters and 5 bowlers, and one of them is a bit of an all-rounder in Jansen. Whereas you look at the others, you know, England is sort of like they've got sometimes fudging their 6 a bit with Moeen Ali there, and then they have some Sam Curran down at 8 or 9 because they want to, you know, give themselves as many options with the ball and make sure they can recover from any collapse with the bats. Africa are just not doing that, and it's entirely working because that top 6 is in unbelievable form. Mm. Like Quinton de Kock is, you know, going to retire at the end of the World Cup and is in the form of his career, and really. He's looked absolutely brilliant today.
You asked me a few days ago, had my opinion on South Africa changed that much? And I said no, after the Sri Lanka game, because so much of their, they've not had that much recent success, but their recent success has been on pitches that you don't really see in India that much. And it just so happened to be that Delhi pitch against Sri Lanka was quite similar to what they have back at home. Mm-hmm. But I thought this felt really different in that, you know, it's really hard to quantify what is a par score, but South Africa's 311, I think, was miles above par. The pitch was tacky, massive square boundaries. It felt really difficult to score off balls that were dug into the pitch with pace off. Then Australia gifted them loads of chances. There were also misfields. And I thought de Kock and Markram were brilliant in particular. And there's a lot of chat about how good the South Africa top 6 is. I think it's really significant that they're not just good, they're really good in India. De Kock, Markram, Claassen and Miller are all not just IPL players, are properly good IPL players. So they have experience of adapting to the different pitches that you get across the tournament in India. And I thought the way those two attacked, there were some individual shots that were just breathtaking. The six that De Kock hits to reach his 100, a hook off Pat Cummins, Markram hit an amazing pull shot for six. The shots that you don't really associate with those slow pitches with massive boundaries.
Two flicks over fine leg and consecutive balls as well from De Kock, one of which he almost got caught out and just cleared the man and then does the same again. It's also a top six that all fits together as well as having that experience in India. Like you've got the anchor men in there in Temba Bavuma and Razi Vanadis, and you've got De Kock who gets off to a fly. You've got Markram who can kind of play any role, and you've got the absolute explosive finishers in Klaasen and Miller. But I think crucially as well, they all just average loads. Like they're all averaging kind of at least 14 ODI cricket, and some of them quite a bit more than that. So if that's happening, then you're actually going to get to 300 quite often. And also the reason why they are now World Cup contenders, like you can talk all you want about who's the best team in the competition, who's stronger out of X and Y or whatever, but actually once you get into it, a lot of teams can beat a lot of other teams in their day. And South Africa have now beaten two good teams, one team who might still contend for the semi-finals, I guess we'll discuss them a bit later, and then if they then beat Bangladesh, Netherlands, Afghanistan, which is a reasonable size if, but they should do that, then all of a sudden they're at five wins, and they kind of only need to be taking one off of New Zealand, Pakistan, India, England, and then they're kind of through to the semi-finals. So that already kind of makes them tournament contenders, because as we've seen in these two games, they have a batting lineup that if it fires, is just so, so hard to keep in check.
Matt asks, is Quinton De Kock the cricket equivalent of Eden Hazard? he and the whole team, to be honest, just seems so relaxed at the moment. He's brilliant to watch, and yeah, I think he does give off Hazard vibes.
Yeah, I guess an underrated great of a generation, calling it quits on their own terms. A certain amount of an interesting relationship with the sport that they play, I suppose, and are each have an easy relationship with their own pursuit of glory, I guess. Hazard wasn't that fussed about winning everything he could, and De Kock seemingly isn't either.
Very well answered. I liked how they picked the two specialist spinners today. It shows a bit of flexibility that actually might be easier to do now that Norkia is injured, weirdly. Because with Norkia, you almost feel obliged to pick him, Rabada, Ngidi and Jansen every time. Jansen because of the all-round stuff. And potentially at the expense of having the ideal balance. And they were Ngidi and Rabada were world class. Ngidi gave away nothing with the new ball. He's so good on those sort of pitches. And your moment of the day was that ball from Rabada to English.
Yeah, and maybe it was my moment of the week. it was an amazing, amazing ball. Was it Hayden on commentary saying he played around the straight one, which was incredibly harsh because it was very quick. It was full enough. Maybe could have been a touch further forward, but who am I really to say that? but moved away. I guess the thing is, you don't normally get away moving balls that still sort of crash into like halfway up, often middle. But that's what this one did. And Josh English's his face was extraordinary as well afterwards, like a properly wide open mouth, not just in an O shape, like a fish shape. Basically, was how flabbergasted he was. Coming in for your first game in a World Cup and getting a ball like that, four balls in is not ideal.
Not the only Australian to be shocked by their dismissal today. Ben Jones asks, is South Africa's model of putting a short form white ball tournament at the heart of the traditional home summer something other countries could replicate to recreate their success?
The only thing to say, I mean, on that, maybe. I mean, you know, it's helped Markram get back into form, I suppose. That was the beginning of his rejuvenation.
Are you seriously?
Obviously there's a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek thing there. I think we know what Ben Jones is referring to. But Markram, it helped him get back into form. I think it probably helped with Klaasen as well. I think that's, he has risen up and it does give a platform to some of those players. But also I think you can look at actually other brave decisions that Cricket South Africa have taken. They could easily have not been at this tournament. It's easy to forget that. Like, I know that Sri Lanka then cruised through the qualifiers in a way that maybe South Africa would if they went there. But when they forfeited that series against Australia, they would have, like, they were properly in danger of not making this. And now they're at the tournament and smashing Australia.
And it wasn't just forfeiting that series. It was picking way, way, way below full strength squads for others as well. Just on Australia were weirdly bad. terrible in the field. Something like 7 drop catches, loads of missed fields. Some of the pundits on TV were critical of their negativity, as well as Maxwell Bold. Bowling him in the power play without a slip is hardly going out of your way in the search for early wickets. Stark didn't bowl his full allocation. I know he wasn't at his absolute best, but still that felt weird. Stoinis, who was very good with the new ball in South Africa recently, is a totally different proposition in the middle overs. And speaking of Ben Jones, actually, I thought he made a really good point in a tweet. He said, last year, Australia were obsessed with trying to get batting depth, obscene depth into the 11. I can't remember a side's long-term tactical plan being so completely shellacked by one injury, that of Head. From that to Smith and Marnus in the top 4 and Cummins at 8 is a huge shift. I think that's interesting for a couple of reasons. One, they identified a way of playing that was working well, but also, regardless of the Head injury, Cummins coming in was always going to change that. He weakens the batting depth significantly if it's him at 8. And then the Head injury is just enormous. It means that they have for 2023 a really old school engine room at 3 and 4. They're basically the only team in the tournament where none of their 6 best batters keep. So they have to pick a keeper who isn't one of their best 6 or 7 batters. And they almost always have to pick a seam bowling all-rounder in Green or Stoinis, which is fine generally, but they are both out of form with the bat at the moment. So there's a lot going on there that isn't ideal. And also, we'll talk about it today. It sort of speaks of a wider lack of white ball talent, actually. There's a lot of guys who've been around for a long time. New guys, Green's the only one, really, haven't really come in and established themselves or even come close to doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess when you look at Stark not bowling his full allocation of overs, that also speaks to the makeup of that side. Because if you've got Marsh in there, and especially Stoinis batting down there at number 7, and then they're not bowling at all, then that kind of shows up how skewed your side is. And if you've got guys in there, you kind of think, oh, I may as well throw the ball to them, and all of a sudden you've bowled 4 overs of not your best bowlers, and then that means that's 4 that your best bowlers don't bowl. And it just is a real puzzle. And we should say, it's not just that Head misses out because of the type of player, it is just because of the player he is. Like, he is the best batter in that top 6. Now, we picked a world 11 for the tournament. He got into that. Like, if Butler got injured, England would be way worse. Like, have sympathy for Australia there. And you wonder what they can do about it in the tournament, right? Because if they... Because who can they... Who can they leave out? That in that South Africa series, when they were going big, it was based on the fact that they had all-rounders all the way down their lineup, and they've had to bring back in Stark, Cummins and Hazelwood because they're Stark, Cummins and Hazelwood.
Well, it's funny you asked that. We'll get to that in part 2, okay. Where we will also talk about a couple of contentious umpiring decisions and have a quick look ahead to tomorrow's game.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, Ben, your question at the end of part 1 is, what can Australia do? They're partly hamstrung by the fact that Travis Head is in their squad and he's not available for a while longer. So they effectively have a 14-man squad. The 3 players who didn't play today were Abbott, Green and...
Carey.
And Carey. Do you think Cummins could drop himself? Because if the extra batting depth is what gave them that success before the tournament, that is where they get it from. And Cummins doesn't have a really clear role with the ball. He's obviously very good, but he isn't the world beater that he is in Test cricket.
Yeah, they could do. And it would be a very brave call, and in some ways maybe quite a Cummins call, because of, how he's viewed as a captain and that sort of thing. And there is cricketing logic there for sure. If you bring in Sean Abbott for Pat Cummins, then maybe you do get to do that properly. You know, Abbott 8, Stark 9 or you bring Green in, say, then you bring Green 6, Inglis can go down to 7 or 8, and then you do have like, that's really deep, and then maybe that can free up Smith and Labuschagne to an extent to come out properly hard, because, you know, they are both players who can whack it. It's not as if they're completely shotless. So that would be something they could do, but maybe they'd be more likely to trial leaving out Hazelwood first, possibly. He is a better one-day bowler than Cummins, but equally that would slightly give them a bit more batting depth, because Cummins is a good batter, as he showed today. And, you know, Hazelwood isn't setting the world alight with the ball either. So that would be...
He went pretty well against India.
Yeah, no, he did. Yeah. But I guess that Cummins might think, okay, give me a new white ball, see what I can do, sort of thing.
Yeah, fair point.
So I think they probably just will stick with it, try and bat themselves. And I guess, you know, if you're going to have Smith and Labuschagne, you think they should be getting us up to 240, as looked possible against India, for example, then actually that bowling attack should be able to defend those sort of totals. It's just weird that they've changed tack so completely when they must have known that's what they were going to do. Even with head in the side, you bring Stark. That's almost the thing that has really had to change their mentality more than the makeup of that top six, I think.
There are a couple of contentious moments, Ben. Do you want to talk us through them? The first one involving Steve Smith was weird, and the second one involving Stoinis was probably a mistake.
Yeah, so the Smith one was an LBW decision where... And there's been a lot of LBW decisions with Smith recently that we've said that looks like a shocker, and then you see it on review, like, oh, actually, it's fine. This one was a bit weirder because they didn't show the replay right to begin with on the DRS. They just showed the back frame from the back that showed he was out, and Smith was like, what, you didn't even show the animation, kind of thing. And then when you saw the animation later and you actually look at it, trying, like, you can just about see it, he just gets into weird positions, and that's kind of what
I think that's
here.
It because he was very annoyed at getting out LBW when in a very similar position multiple times when he was playing for Sussex in the county championship. Everyone on Twitter was saying those are howlers, and he gets one, I think, off Josh Tung in the Lords test match that looked exactly the same, reviewed, and it turns out it was actually out. Yeah. And this was quite similar as well. You're right, he just gets in very odd positions that other players don't really get into.
Yeah, we'll get on to Hayden, but a little good Matthew Hayden, but there he says you can shake your head as many times as you want, but that's crashing into the stumps. And then the other one, this one was contentious. So Stoinis was originally given not out, gloving down the leg side, basically. And so then they roll the review through, and you're thinking, like, okay, it's hit something, can't have hit back pad. Look, waiting for the ultra edge, it comes. There's a spike as ball passes glove. So there's no room for debate there. The question is, I guess, what has it hit? Is it a handle? Has it hit glove? And also then, which glove has it hit? And is that glove touching either the bat or the other glove? There was some... So what the TV umpire said was that his right glove was touching his left glove, which was touching the bat, which is therefore out. If that was the case, that would be the correct decision, because a glove that is holding the bat becomes part of the bat effectively. So glove, touching bat is glove, touching bat. So that's out.
I'm still following.
Yeah. But if you look at, like, he's basically, judge made that decision based on the right hand of the ultra red split screen, where you can see the two gloves close together, but when you look at the left hand side, you could that actually is a sort of perspective thing going on, that
they're actually not that close.
It's a distance away. Yeah, it's kind of you can do it with your own hands.
I got the vibe that when he was talking us through the decision, that he just wanted to show off that he knew the law.
Yeah,
because he was very confidently explained, oh, his glove is off the bat, but because the glove is touching the other glove, it is still out, which is all correct. But it didn't take into account the fact that the glove was not actually touching the other glove.
Yeah.
So probably a mistake. My moment of the game was that magnificent half an hour stint that Matthew Hayden did on commentary when the game was dead and buried, where he essentially said that this Australian performance was an affront to what it means to be an Australian. You know, it's a difficult job commentating, as we talked about the other day, commentating on those games where teams from as early as the 18th over, as I think Australia were doing today, essentially playing for net run rate. But the best bit was when he just started reeling off Australian greats and after a really long pause, having made his point. There's a very long pause. He just goes, border, war, Ponting, I thought he was going to say himself for a second.
But he does then sort of turn and look around and then say Finch, because Finch is also in the commentary box. Yeah,
that was excellent.
That was extraordinary.
I thought Hayden was a good... I actually really liked how Hayden was quite critical of their approach in the field as well, because when a team collapses to 70 for six, obviously the batters are in the spotlight. But really, as we talked up top, I think South Africa ended up getting a score miles above par. And I think Australia were quite negative, and I was glad that was called out on air. Ben, tomorrow's game is New Zealand-Bangladesh. Good opportunity for New Zealand to go 3-3. Kane Williamson is back for the Kiwis, which is the big news there. Their 2019 World Cup game was notable for a couple of reasons.
Yeah, it was a good game. I think maybe it was, if I remember it right, it ended up looking slightly closer than it was. Maybe New Zealand lost a few late wickets and stumbled over the line. They eventually won that by 3 wickets. But it was a good game, and that tournament started with a lot more close games than this one has. But my abiding memory of it is that Tilda Swinton was up in one of the corporate boxes wearing a Bangladesh shirt, which either said Tilda or Swinton on the back. So Avengers / Memoria star. I don't know what else has she been in.
Lion, the Witch, in the Wardrobe.
Yeah, she was in that, wasn't she? Yeah, I mean, obviously one of the greats.
One of the greats. I'm just looking on Getty to see if there are any photos of
Tilda Swinton in it
at the cricket.
Yeah. Tilda Swinton.
No, there's nothing, unfortunately. Or at least none in our subscription. Anyway, lots to look forward to tomorrow and on Saturday. Obviously, it's the big one. And England, Afghanistan on Sunday. Loads to look forward to. That's it for today. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow.
Sports Social Podcast Network.